Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, where we discuss everything in the Hooniverse. Join us each week as we bring you news, rumor, and recap. And now your hosts, Jay Witten. You win this one, Internets! And Melissa Mazza.
We were playing fast and loose with the term.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing episodes that have already aired, as well as news that's public knowledge. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Have something you want to say? You can email us at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @GallifreyRadio or leave a comment on each episode at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. This week we discuss the newest addition to every Whovian's must-have collection, Little Black Cubes, on the penultimate episode of The Pawns.
Hello and welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio with Melissa and Jay. Welcome, Jay, again.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. This is another brand new episode this week of Doctor Who. So, how's your week been so far?
It's been good. I'm trying to hold on to the days I have left until Saturday, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good otherwise.
if we said this, we're like, before we know it, it's going to be the fall break.
Yeah, I mean, it's blown by. I'm amazed at how quickly everything's flown by, and it just, I don't know, I expected it to be more. I mean, that's always the way it is, though.
So. Yeah, it reminds me, I have here this, the Doctor Who Twitter account. Have you seen this? It's Doctor Who Official at BBC Doctor Who. They said, "The angels take Manhattan in 4 days. Everything's going to be fine." And then the next one is the quote, "You know when grown-ups tell you everything's going to be fine, and you think they're probably lying to make you feel better."
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. That was, I was like, oh, man, that does not help matters any. So, yeah, we'll spend some time at the end of the episode talking about our ideas or theories for what's coming up, but
okay.
Well, I thought that. Well, actually, do you have any news or anything?
No, that was it. Everything's just speculation on next week's episode. So
yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny how, you know, there's during the breaks, there's, you know, every little bit of news, you know, Matt Smith had coffee with breakfast this morning, you know?
Right.
And then, like, while the show's on, everyone's like, yeah, I don't care, I just want the next episode.
Right, right.
Just funny how that works out. Yeah, I mean, there really hasn't been anything. It's once the show started, it all kind of dried up. I mean, there was the little bit of a speculation. I think you brought it up last week, but we hadn't started recording yet about, you know, Matt Smith saying that he would love to shoot an episode in New Zealand and have Peter Jackson direct it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Peter Jackson has come back saying, "I would absolutely love to do that. Let's get together and do this." And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's all the information we have at this point. There's no solid, yes, it's going to happen. There's not even, well, we're thinking about it. You know, it's just these two people who have never actually met saying, yes, I want to do this. Okay, well, where does that leave us? Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I'm trying not to make too much of it, because it would be awesome if they did that. But
yeah, but, I mean, Peter Jackson is still, you know, working on the Hobbit movies, which has turned into a trilogy now. Yeah.
Oh, so, my God, really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's originally, it was going to be two movies, and then it got stretched out into three. So, and they're going to include a lot of stuff from, you know, from the auxiliary books, the ancillary stuff, like, you know, Tom Bombadil and the Silmarillion and things like that, just the extra books that Tolkien had written, and just work them into the story. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Especially since Sylvester McCoy, I don't know if you knew this, the Seventh Doctor, is playing Radagast the Brown.
I did hear that, yes.
So, I mean, there's our connection. We're allowed to talk about it. So, you know, yep. Stop getting angry, people.
Backspace.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this episode was fun. It was fun in the sense that it actually felt like it fit and it had a purpose, not like the campy, cheesy fun of dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, this was a solid addition to the series.
Yeah, a lot of character stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of, like, it was like a different pacing than what we've seen the last couple weeks. But I like that, you know. It's, what the episode is to me is like showing a day, quote unquote, in the life of one of the companions when they're not with the doctor, and they like, you know, Stephen Moffat likes to twist it and do those kinds of crazy things. So. This is a Mark Chibnall episode. He likes to do that too. Mm.
The interesting thing was, you know, you've got the story of the slow invasion, the boxes showing up everywhere, and you know, and it's just, it's permeated throughout the episode. They're always there. They're always in the frame. You know, it's supposed to be a big deal, but that storyline was actually subpar. I mean, that was a very ancillary thing. The real focus of this episode was Amy and Rory and their relationship, their life, and how the doctor interacted with that.
Yeah.
You know, instead of them being a part of the doctor's life, this was all about their life, and the doctor gets thrown in.
Yeah.
It was great that, you know, taking that formula that's been around for 50 years and flipping it on its head. It was really interesting.
So what else? I don't understand when they said we think it's been 10 years, 10 years on and off, because I thought they got married in 2010. I'm not sure if they never really say when this is taking place.
Well, she said not 10, you know, 10 years, not for you and not for Earth, but for us. So you know, they've been running around with the doctor and living their life for 10 years. So basically, you know, the doctor will drop them off. You know, they'll run around for a few months, the doctor will drop them off, and then he'll be gone for, say, like a day to him, but it's actually been like 10 months for them. So, you know, they're basically just doubling up on their time. So, you know, it's been 10 years for Amy and Rory, but, you know, it hasn't been that long for the doctor or for Earth. So, you know, it may have only been 2-3 years since they actually got married.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely threw in a lot of the timey-wimey stuff in this one, you know, especially with their, you know, their anniversary. You know, and the doctor comes and takes them away, and, you know, and I'm glad they brought Brian back. I love the fact that they brought him back. He was great in this episode.
I think he was better in this episode than in the last one. He has more of, like, a quiet dignity than, like, the comic relief, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess we can just kind of work through the episode here.
Okay.
I liked at the beginning they used the shot from the Big Bang where all the planets or all the stars were blowing up from Series 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that was just frame for frame. It was the same shot. So, I mean, it was kind of a way of tying it back and saying, you know, this was all about their previous adventures. You know, they did a lot of the fast-paced, you know, quick shots, quick flashes from previous episodes and, like, reminding you of the life that they've had together, you know.
Yeah, I think there were clips from a few episodes.
Yeah. This one really, they were hammering home the relationships in this one. And, I mean, they were just telegraphing the fact that, you know, it's coming to a close. You know, I mean, just they were just beating you over the head with it in this episode.
Yeah. That's why it's so, like, they do that. They're just going to make you love them more and more. So that they can, the emotional impact.
Yeah. I liked... Yeah, I mean, that scene where Amy and the doctor were talking in the kitchen when they're talking about the 10 years, you know, it's a quiet moment where, you know, they get to stop and talk while nothing else is really distracting. You don't get that very often. I mean, especially not in the past year or two.
Yeah. This episode felt different than most previous episodes, just going back as many seasons as I can remember for that reason. Like, he never just sits and talks with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, this did kind of have a similar vibe of from The Lodger, you know, where it's, what would the doctor be like in everyday life?
You know, yeah, yeah.
And I love the little montage, you know, when they're sitting around watching the cubes, and he's like, I have to be busy, I have to be doing something. You know, Rory said, you told us we had to be patient. Yes, you have to be patient.
Yeah. And it turns out to be, he's out there an hour.
Exactly. I mean, you know, paints the fence, kicking the soccer ball around, vacuuming, just doing all kinds of stuff, and, you know, it takes him an hour. But, I mean, that's true, though. You know, I mean, when have you ever seen the doctor just stop and take a moment?
Oh, yeah. He's totally manic crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the only time when he slows down is when he's showing his companion something, and he's giving them a moment to take it all in. He never takes a moment for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they're actually, Brian is the direct opposite of the doctor, and like I think they do that on purpose for literary reasons, because he sits there for 4 days before he said, oh, yeah. Time flies when you're alone with your thoughts. Like, that's the exact opposite of how the doctor is in these scenes.
Exactly. And I mean, you can see in this episode where Rory gets his sense of loyalty. You know, the doctor tells him to do something, and he does it, and doesn't question, doesn't do anything. You know, he sits in there for 4 days because the doctor said, watch this thing. You know, he never once thought, maybe he forgot about me, maybe I'm done at this point. Hey, yo, can I come out now? You know, doctor said to watch it, I'm watching it. Yeah, you know, that's very, very reminiscent of how Rory has been in a lot of the episodes.
Yeah. And usually, like, Amy's kind of abusive toward him, but we didn't get that so much in this episode. It was just, like, them kind of having mellowed out as a married couple.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, when they're talking about making commitments and stuff, you know, and, you know, they say the thing, you know, is it, did real life just start? I think it did. I kind of like this, you know. You see that, you know, they've gone past that starstruck stage of being with the doctor, where it's like, everything's not so amazing. Hey, you know, normal life has its draws, you know. I'm kind of intrigued by this. Yes, that was a nice little change too.
Yes, this episode was very pro real life.
Now they, I don't know if you were paying attention, but God knows I was. They never said anything about Christmas.
Exactly. They never said it explicitly, but there were references. It was definitely a holiday time of year. The hospital was decked out for Christmas. That was number one.
Yeah.
But also, I believe when they leave in the final scene in the TARDIS, there are Christmas lights up. I don't know if it's you know, if it's actually December or if that's just like their decor. But people are saying now it's there are light bulbs in every episode.
I was about to bring that one up, you know, because I've noticed that in, you know, in Asylum of the Daleks, when Amy was sitting at her makeup chair or whatever, you know, they focus in real close when the Dalek's about to take her at this light kind of dimming and flickering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, you've got, you know, the episode starts out with Brian and Rory working on the light bulb in their house. You know, they can't get it to work. Then there's, you know, at the end, you know, Rory's still working on it in a town called Mercy. You know, when the doctor finds Jack's spaceship and he's going along the wire and Jack looks at the light bulb that starts dimming and flickering. Yeah, and in this episode, there were lights all over the place. I mean, there's always lights in the background, especially with, you know, at the hospital and at their anniversary party. You know, there's all kinds of twinkly lights in this one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, at this point, you know, it might be that people are looking for that kind of thing, that, you know, it's like, hey, I found this thing that kind of starts stringing through, so I'm going to latch on to any little thing I can find to fit that theory.
Yeah.
You know, but again, you know, this is Moffat. He's come out and said that there's no overarching story here, that, you know, it's, these are each individual stories, but when was the last time you trusted anything Moffat said?
Right.
I mean, the guy's name has become a four-letter word, let's be honest.
Yeah. And I like that. You know what? It's also, too, it's a good way to do it story-wise on Moffat's part, because you can, someone who's never seen this show can watch an individual episode and enjoy it and not care about how many light bulbs were in the, you know what I mean? Like, and but this could also be leading up to something really, really crazy that true fans will really love.
Yeah. Well, there was a thing that kind of feeds into the theory we talked about last week about how, you know, the Doctor knows what's coming. Mm-hmm. And at this episode, there were so many things that made me think, no, that's not what's going on. But there was one thing that did, because in... All right, do you remember last week in A Town Called Mercy when they first walk into the town and Rory says something about the electricity? And the Doctor's like, yeah, but it's 10 years too early. Well, you know, that's not an awful lot. The Doctor responds and says, yeah, you said the same thing when you left your phone charger in Henry VIII's, you know, bedchamber.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a quick throwaway line. In this episode, you know, they, when they're off on their little adventure during their anniversary, you know, they're hiding under the bed in that one area, and you know, there's a line there that, you know, Amy said, somebody asked a question, I said yes. You know, you married Henry VIII on our anniversary. So as soon as I heard that, I kind of, my ears perked up, and I was like, wait, what a minute? And I looked, and Rory had a phone charger with him under the bed.
Yeah, and he drops it when the Doctor sneezes or something, right?
I can't remember. I just noticed he had it, and I got That's so excited. Great. I was like, oh! So I mean, that makes me think that it's, you know, it's kind of like the thing from Series 5 when the Doctor travels back to the, you know, the time of Angels, to tell Amy to remember him. You know, it's like that's the first thing I thought was maybe they are tying it back together like that. So. I don't know. Yeah, it does make me think that there might be some validity, but like I said, there was a lot in this that made me think that it wasn't.
Right. No, I like that, though, yeah.
But I did think that it was interesting. I definitely think that there might be something going on that, you know, they're playing with different timelines somehow. How they do, I don't know, but...
Yeah, I mean, I hope they tie it together in a cool way. I hope it makes sense.
Yeah. I like when they got back and, you know, Brian asked the Doctor, how long were they gone for? I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and Brian's like, you know, they were wearing different clothes a while ago. You know? And it's like, at that, you can see in this scene, in this exchange, how much respect the Doctor has for Brian. Because as soon as he says that, the Doctor cuts out all of his crap. You know, he doesn't try and lie to him. He doesn't try and spin it. He's like, okay, here's your answer. You know, they've been gone for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Brian asks him about his previous companions. And this is really the first time that we see the 11th Doctor, you know, talk about his companions that he had before.
That's something that's always bothered me, too. This was always, like, it started with Amy. And I think they're really playing with that now. But, like... you're right. This is the first time that he's ever really mentioned the previous. But not actually, no. There was the time that the ship's interface.
Yeah,
the TARDIS
showed
the
previous companions. Yeah, but there's never really been a big like acknowledgement of the fact that they were there. Aside from that, so
yeah, and it is nice that this was Brian that he's talking to.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, you see the Doctor become very somber at that moment. He's, you know. He's telling him, you know, some people left, some were taken, and very few of them died. You know, and, you know, Brian doesn't really react to that, but you know what's going on, and the Doctor's, you know, reassures him. He's like, not them, never them. You know, and you get that, you know, my life before theirs vibe from him. You know.
But how would this jibe with, the theory that he knows what's coming.
That's what I'm saying. This is one of those things that pokes a hole in it. You know, because he would not bold-faced lie to Brian like that. Not in this scene. He might, but that's not the feeling I get from this. You know, if that turned out to be the case, this scene would be very disjointed from that story. So I don't think that this fits into that theory.
Yeah, I hope it's yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And then you know they had the moment sitting on the couch eating fish fingers and custard.
Ew, I know. I was like, ew, fish fingers and custard.
I mean, it was a great little throwback, and you know we don't get any reference to the Doctor playing classical music or anything in this episode, but he does talk about inventing Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's pudding, but it's savory. You know, sound familiar? That was great.
I mean, first of all, in England, they call everything a pudding, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I also like the other line about, he goes, is all that you can do? Is that all you can do, Hover? I had a metal dog that could do that.
Right, yeah, I mean, this is the point.
Preferred canine.
Yeah. This is the point when all the cubes start coming to life, when, you know, I mean, that's the thing, the pacing on this episode was really strange, because we're like two-thirds of the way through the episode now, and the cubes finally come into play. You know, so it's a bit odd, you know, it seems like they wanted to get the relationship stuff out there, but they really did it at a cost of this storyline, because the rest of it feels so condensed and so crammed in there that, you know, it feels almost like an afterthought, like, oh yeah, we got to do something with these cubes. Quick, let's do this, you know.
I think they did that with dinosaurs on a spaceship, too. Like, it was all this extra stuff, and then, like, a little thrown together plot line at the end.
Yeah, and I mean, the difference being that they really didn't have anything to hold on to in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. You know, it was all kind of pointless. You know, this, they at least had a decent premise in the, you know, the relationships.
Yeah, I liked the relationship stuff personally. I think they did the pacing on purpose, where it was just slow, and, you know, it's supposed to be the year of the slow invasion. It's a
exactly,
year,
yeah.
You know?
And, I mean, it really worked. You know, the cubes were supposed to be there long enough that people forgot they were there, and you almost forget that they're there as an audience, you know?
Yeah.
So it may have been intentional, but it just seemed kind of weird to me once the show started to pick up. So, I don't know. I mean, I did love that scene, though, when the Doctor's playing the Wii, because, I mean, it just seemed to fit so well.
Like, and he's yelling at the back and forth.
Mm-hmm. The line where, you know, the cube gets in his face and he, you know, kind of dawns on him. He's like, okay, something's happening now, you know. The line he says, you know, that, you know, I don't know what you want, I don't know what you are, but these people, this planet, are precious to me, and I will defend them to my last breath. That was so very Tenet. Yeah, I mean, that was Tenet all over right there. Yeah, and this, I shouldn't have said that, because now I feel like I'm weird for saying this, but this episode was the first time that I really felt Matt Smith was the Doctor. Yeah, I mean, I know that he is, and I've accepted him as that, but this is the very first time where I've looked at the screen and goes, holy crap, it's the Doctor. You know, it's...
Yeah.
And he definitely brought in some characteristics, you know, when the cubes first show up, and, you know, he's talking about, you know, humans picking them up and taking them in, and, you know, he's, you know, almost disgusted with them for doing it. You know, that was very Eccleston. You know, he's very, superior and, you know, almost not fatherly to them, but, you know, he's...
Chaperone.
He's an authority figure that, you know, is looking down on them, you know, saying, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. Not really correcting them, but saying, I can't believe you guys are really this stupid, you know. Mm-hmm. And, so he was definitely bringing in some different characteristics from the previous Doctors, and, I mean, that it really sold me on him.
Yeah, he always reminds me of Eccleston, but you're right. There will that line especially about how these people are precious to me. Very, very Tenet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, that, like I said, this is the first time that I've really felt that he was the Doctor, and I'm so very happy with it. You know, it was a long time coming for me, but...
That's a great endorsement of the episode.
Yeah.
If nothing else, if it made you feel that way, you know.
Honestly, I've heard that from a few other people, too. You know, where
I can totally see that.
So, yeah, I mean, Matt Smith has really taken this role and made it his own. And it's working for him. So then we get the cubes doing all their very random and different stuff. You know, one of them stabs Amy and takes her pulse. And the Doctor flies around and surfs the net and shoots lasers. You know, Rory's opens up. Now, I love when Brian comes in. My cube moved.
Yeah.
I mean, it shook. He's like, really? That's all?
They all give him that little look, too. Like, so endearingly awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple parts in this episode when, you know, Brian gets the little pat on the head, you know, like when he's going off on his theories at the beginning, you know, maybe they're transports for little miniature robots, or like a jigsaw puzzle that you have to put together. You know, he goes through
the list. Literally every scenario until they say they're a marketing hoax, and then you're like, done, that's everything that it could possibly be. Like, he's like the voice of the audience here, people coming up with things, but of course, Amy and Rory just dismiss it.
Yeah, and I mean, the Doctor is just kind of like, you know, he's like, very good, Brian, very thorough. You're waiting for him to pat him on the head and go, oh, good boy, who's a good boy, you know? But, I mean, it was great seeing that kind of thing coming into the episode, and, you know, it was just so much fun.
Yeah, and again, a lot of character stuff, like, you really see where Rory gets a lot of things, and,
yeah. I don't know if you saw this. It was off in the corner, and it was blink and you'll miss it kind of thing. But when the cube that stabs Amy, there's one shot where they're showing the cube sitting on the dresser, and on the lower left hand side of the screen, out of focus, you can see a fob watch, like a pocket watch. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, why would they have that? Oh my God, Rory really is the master. <It's> like, I mean, it just, I don't see them going back to that trope, but it made me wonder why it was there.
They might be throwing it in just to mess with me.
They really could be, and I would not dismiss that possibility, but it was there. I was like, oh my God, it's there.
I need to be more observant because I didn't see that. If he, you know what, what if it's true? What if Rory's the master and we're sitting here one day like, wow, so you were right.
We went with that. Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I've thought it that could fit in very well, you know, that, you know, Rory reveals himself as the master or remembers himself as the master or something, and like, maybe he is the downfall of Amy. You know, maybe he's the reason that Amy can no longer be a companion. You know, and I'm like, that would be messed up. I mean, they've said that the episode is going to be emotional, and can you name anything else than taking Rory, the most loyal person that you can name, and have him betray Amy?
Right.
Oh, I mean, that would just mess me up so much.
Oh, right. My God. Like, now what if it... It's true. Like, Amy and Rory are like... If they can't make it, who can?
Exactly. Anyway, all right. Get back on top. So, all right. And then now we start seeing the Doctor really interact with Kate Stewart. I know you're not big on Classic Who, but I love the fact that they tied her in.
Yeah, I've looked it up. And so, again, like you said, I've never seen any Classic Who. I do intend to one day. Just have to. Brigadier Alan Lethbridge Stewart, mm-hmm. was on Doctor Who through he and Sarah Jane Smith, mm-hmm. Sarah Jane Adventures, mm-hmm. For the second, third, fourth, and seventh Doctor's incarnations. Mm-hmm. And then the actor passed away in 2011, and in The Wedding of River Song, Doctor gets a phone call that the Brigadier died.
Yeah, and that was their way of acknowledging, saying, hey, you know, we remember this guy, he was part of the family, let's give him an homage one more time. You know, so, and, I mean, when Kate Stewart came on the screen, as soon as she did, I knew right then, simply because, I mean, she had the same mannerisms, the same way of talking, you know, walking in with her hands in her pockets and her coat thrown back. I mean, that was the Briggs stance. You know, that's
really
how he stood. Yeah, so, I mean, if you were a fan of Classic Who, or if you'd seen it before or whatever, they let you know right up front who she was. You know, and when she said her name was Kate Stewart, I was like, oh, what happened to Lethbridge? Okay, whatever. And then, you know, the Doctor says something about that. You know, he calls her out later on, you know, having already figured it out.
Right.
You know, and, you know, he's like, why'd you drop Lethbridge? And she's like, I didn't want any favors. So it was a great tie-in to the classic stuff. I loved it.
I think, you know, now we've mentioned how this episode is tied to the 10th Doctor and the 9th Doctor, and now all this history here. Mm-hmm. I think they're really getting ready for the 50-year anniversary reunion kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, Moffat, you know, Moffat's a huge fan of Classic Who. You know, I mean, there's pictures of him as a child sitting there reading the Target novels.
Yes. Really?
Yeah, he's been a Whovian his whole life, so it's very understandable that he is tying stuff like that in. You know, but anyway, so, and then we find out that, you know, all the cubes are going off doing their own thing. The chicken dance cube.
The Doctor looks so annoyed.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you have to wonder, you know, how many cubes there really are and, like, what all they're doing. Because this one is dedicated to playing the chicken song on a loop. And I'm like, what information could they possibly be getting? So, well, it's dedicated to getting this one, you know, do people like this song? No. Okay, that's that cube's entire purpose for existence. It's like, really? God, there have got to be a ton of these things if they've got a cube dedicated to that.
It doesn't necessarily mean they have a cube dedicated to everything.
No, I know, but it does kind of give you a scale. It's like,
yeah, definitely. I thought that was a really funny.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was purely comedic effect, but it was great. So I love the scene with Amy and the Doctor sitting outside. You know, this was a sweet moment between the two of them that, you know, like I said, we don't get these anymore.
Yeah, and this is Amy. Yeah, Amy and the Doctor. They're pretty much best friends. Like, and you get to really see an intimate moment, like, between two friends. If, like, you know, like you said, they haven't gotten to do this in a while.
Yeah, you've got Amy basically telling the Doctor that they're looking to quit traveling, basically.
Right, but they do say not now.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, but she's admitting to him, you know, we're thinking about it. This is not going to last forever, and, you know, we're not sure how it's going to go. So it was a very emotionally charged moment here.
I got the feeling too. You were talking about how the Doctor is almost paternal toward them, paternalistic.
Mm.
I got that feeling when Amy was talking about these things in this episode. Like, it's almost like he's proud of her. Like, you know, she's...
Yeah.
They are settling down, and he hasn't killed her.
Yeah. No, I mean, okay. I want to actually read this quote, because I think it's so fantastic when the Doctor is... You know, when she asks, why do you, you know... Or she says something about, you know, the traveling is starting to feel like running away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Doctor's like, no. And she's like, oh, then what is it? And, you know, the Doctor says, I'm not running away. but this is one corner of one country on one continent on one planet that's a corner of a galaxy that's a corner of a universe that is forever growing and shrinking and creating and destroying, and we're remaining the same for a single millisecond. And there's so much to see, Amy, because it goes fast. I'm not running away from things. I'm running to them before they flare and fade away. You know, and then he says, you know, I'm running to you before you fade from me. You know, it's the doctor admitting, I know that you're not going to be here for, you know, that you're not going to be able to travel with me forever. I know that there's going to come a time when you stop, whether it's, you know, life, whether it's danger, whether it's old age, whatever. You know, I realize that moment's coming, and so I'm trying to hold on to every bit of it that I possibly can.
Right.
And this is why I'm feeling like he doesn't know that their end is coming yet. Because I can't see him having this kind of moment with her, knowing that she's going to, that this is probably going to be the last time he sees her.
I would agree with that. I think in this episode he doesn't know. That's not to say, though, in previous episodes this season he didn't know, because there could be some timey-wimey stuff going on.
True.
But I have to agree with you here that this conversation probably wouldn't have taken place unless, you know, just like the conversation with Brian wouldn't have taken a place where he says that he promises that they'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just can't imagine the doctor lying to both of them like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other reason why I feel like it's not the case is because look at how the doctor gets every time he loses a companion, whether, you know, they're lost forever, if they just went home, if, you know, whatever the case is, he always gets very, very melancholy and depressed. And if he were to lose someone in such an emotional fashion, as we're led to believe that it's going to be, I can't see him going back and torturing himself, you know, to spend more time with them. You know, he understands the need to move on and to accept things that happen that he can't change, not go back and dwell on them just for a few more minutes or something. You know, that's not who the doctor is, and I have a hard time accepting that he would be like that.
I don't think that he necessarily would have to be wallowing, kind of, for him. Because, you know, I think just as a time traveler, it must be different to him.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not about moving on afterward. It's I don't know, about something else.
Yeah. And, you know, and then he does bring up the fact, you know, she's like, why us? And he says, because you were the first, you know, the first face that this face saw, and, you know, you were seared onto my heart. And, you know, I mean, that was a great, great line right there, that, you know, talking about the impact that she's had on him. You know, like, he's had companions, he's cared for companions, you know, he's loved at least one, you know, but for him to admit, you know, you were seared onto my heart the first time I saw you, you know, that was saying a lot. And that really drove home the point of the power of their relationship.
Yeah, I mean, this whole scene was just so sweet between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a couple moments in this whole scene where, you know, the room started getting a little bit dusty. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then she tells him, you know, don't be nice to me. I don't want you to be nice. And, yeah, you do, Pond. And you always get what you want. it was a great little admission there. So, all right. Then then stuff actually starts going down. You know, the cubes start counting down. So, and then you know, Rory has gone to the hospital to help out there and took Brian with him. And, you know, then we see Brian, or, you know, Brian's messing with the bag while they're trying to get all the cubes out of the hospital. And, you know, Brian's just oblivious. He's like, okay, I'm just going to stay here and stay out of the way. You know, and then Rory asks him to go get tape for bandages or something. I couldn't help wondering, you know, was Rory just trying to get him out of the way at that point? You know, because it seemed like very, like, you know, Rory was focused on getting the cubes out. Then he saw his dad, he's like, oh yeah, hey, can you go do this menial task for me real quick?
Yeah, of course. Of course he's trying to get him out of the way. But it was, you know, it was cute how he did it, and his dad wanted to help.
Yeah, but then, you know, then seconds later, he's concerned. He's like, hey, you know, have you seen my dad? He's not back with the tape yet. You know, I don't know. It makes me wonder, was there an actual task there? Or, was, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really mean anything one way or the other, I guess, but it just made me wonder.
And so the things that he sees when he goes out there, these two creatures with this suction face thing, they barely have any screen time. Like, there's just no time to really get into this story. So I thought that was pretty odd.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, hey, you know, here's generic bad guy's twin and generic creepy girl who, you know, sits in a hospital for a year, and no one notices.
Yeah, what was that all about, too?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them being so busy for an entire year that no one noticed, hey, I've seen that girl here before, you know?
I mean, she could have been, I didn't know if that was like a waiting room or something. Sometimes your loved one is in the hospital for years, you might go there every day, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But a little unattended girl.
I mean, it seemed kind of weird once I tried to put it in real terms, but yeah, at the same time, it was like, yeah, there could have been tons of explanations for it, and they just didn't have time for it. You know, it could have been that somebody approached her every day, and you know, we just didn't see it. Who knows? But you know, no. All right, and so then, you know, Brian gets taken, and Rory goes chasing after him. And this bothered me when Rory gets into the elevator. You know, he runs in, he looks over, he pounds on the side of the elevator. You know, and then the door shut, and then you see him standing there staring at the back wall, like, why didn't he pound on the back wall? What? How did he know that there was something different about this one than the one he just pounded on?
Yeah. Like, I didn't get that.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, you know, it seemed weird that he's just, all of a sudden, like, looks at the back wall like, hey, this looks exactly the same, but there's something different. I don't know. But, again, it's Rory. He's awesome. I'm not going to question.
Yeah, I mean, somehow he knew, and he's Rory.
So then we get the, you know, the cubes attacking, basically, you know, causing, was it the, I think they said a third of the population to have a heart attack.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, all right, put that in perspective. One out of every three people had a heart attack. That means if you're sitting in a room with two people, one of them drops dead. I mean, and they just brush this over like, oh yeah, everybody had a heart attack. Go, quick, solve it. It was like, there needed to be some more weight behind this. There really did.
Well, they get cured. They get unheart attacked or something.
Well, yeah, but I don't know,
you're right. Like, you know, if someone has a heart attack while driving, I'm sure there were quite a few incidental deaths. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I mean, it was the cubes targeted the cube nearest to them. You know, yeah, you know, if I'm picking these things up and collecting them, hey, one right there on the dashboard, screw it, you know? Yeah, so, I don't know, I felt like this right here was probably the thing that suffered the most from being crammed in. Like, it bothers me when they have such a, you know, a mass catastrophe, like such a huge threatening thing that doesn't get the weight it needs. Like, you know, I remember the Christmas special, the Christmas invasion, where, you know, the Sycorax were using blood control. And I mean, they basically started that at the beginning of the episode. You know, so you had the whole episode where you're stressing out thinking, okay, like, you know, what was it? I think again, it was a third of the population is poised, ready to jump to their death. And so, I mean, you've got that underlying current through the whole episode building up tension, and they don't beat you over the head with it, but it's there. This one, it was just kind of like a quick little, oh yeah, people had a heart attack, and now it's fixed. You know, it didn't have the weight that I felt that it could have.
I definitely agree with the comparison to the Sycorax, and that Forgot about that.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, the doctor has has heart failure in one of his hearts. I think that Matt Smith in this little scene here was fantastic. You know, when he's in pain and he's suffering, and for some reason his acting it should have been over the top, but for some reason it wasn't. You know, for some reason I believed it.
Oh yeah, I believed it. It was a little over the top, but.
But it fit, though, for some reason. I don't know why that is. It's like, had it been anyone else, I probably would have been like, okay, really, dude, calm down. It's not that, you know, but I was completely bought in, you know. But, you know, and then...
But, I mean, and also, like you said, if you're sitting in a room with two other people, one of us having a heart attack, it's good to have the doctor there who has two hearts, and he's the one in the room having a heart
yeah,
attack.
Exactly. Yeah, and then... You know, Amy asks him how long he can survive with just one of them, and he's like, not long, minutes maybe. You know, so you can see, yes, he had more time than the rest of us, but he's still going to die just as much as the rest of us, you know? So, yeah, I wonder, would he be able to regenerate after that? I don't know. Because yeah, that's shutting down his system. That's not, you know, that's not repairing a bullet wound or something. That's shutting down his organs.
I think it would. I don't know. The body just reacts to the stress of the situation, possibly.
Yeah, I don't know. Internets, get on it. Find us some information. just interesting thought. But I want to know, you know, was Amy trained on that defibrillator? Yeah.
Oh, that was where my disbelief was stretched a little bit.
It was like she just happened to grab it. She's like, oh, hey, crash cart. All right, I know what to do. Clear. Boom. You know. Yeah. And okay. So, but then again, you know, he's a Time Lord. He's got two hearts. You know, if you get hit with a defibrillator, it's going to mess your heart up if you're not already having heart problems. So.
Oh, so his healthy one could have.
Exactly. I mean, so he got Lefty back, but wouldn't it mess up Righty? I mean. But it just, that was the moment I was like, okay, did Rory specifically train her on, you know, on the defibrillator?
All right, we have to say that he did to avoid a continuity error. So.
Okay, I'll accept that. So, you know, then we get the spaceship and the Shockery, which, isn't that like some sort of Buddhist meditation thing or something? I don't know. I heard Shockery and I was like, really? That just sounds kind of off. I don't know why. But
so you were saying how the Shockery, it sounds like some Buddhist meditation or something. I taught yoga for a few years. I haven't been teaching it lately, but we talk about the chakras.
That's what it is.
Yeah, so you always hear about going into yoga to align your chakras. And there are seven of them, or seven major ones. So this was the Shockery connected to seven portals on the earth. They might have done it on purpose.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds kind of cheap. Huh. All right.
Just a thought.
all right, so then they find Brian and wake him up. And I loved Brian's expression when when they're wheeling him out. I mean, he's just sitting there being rolled backwards, like just staring blankly. I mean, no expression, no. It was just hilarious to me.
Wait, when was this? What are you talking?
When they wake Brian up and they start getting him off the ship, they're rolling him out on the gurney, and he's just sitting there like, what?
Yeah.
It was just great. I loved it. So, let's see. All right, now, there was a part here where they're dealing with the Doctor and Amy and Rory are on the ship dealing with the Shockery, and then they cut back to the hospital, and they're talking to Karen Stewart, and they say, you know, she's talking about, you know, no, I forget what it is, she's... Basically saying, like, nothing like this. What was it? The part of the line that stuck out to me was, she says, our best hope now is each other. And it was that was the only thing you see of that. And is there some significance to that that I'm missing? Because, I mean, they singled that out. They went through effort to single that out. And I'm not sure why.
You know, well, I mean, it sounds like you kind of have a theory about it. Do you have?
No, I really don't. It was just the fact that they singled it out. It stood out to me, and I don't know why that is. And I just I'm like, am I missing something here? Is it just something subtle, or you know, am I again looking too far into things? But it was just it seemed so odd that it was singled out like that. I don't know. Well, maybe if people have theories, they'll let us know.
Yeah, exactly, and we can talk about it next week. Yeah. We can discuss it through the whole break.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that we miss, we will bring back up. I promise that. So, well, at the end when you know the doctor does his mass defibrillation, and then says, "Oh yeah, and there's a huge energy wave that's going to be coming back. Run!" When he takes off. And Rory looks at Amy and goes, "I'm going to miss this."
Yeah. I thought he said, "I missed this," no?
Said, "I'm going to miss this."
Yeah, I guess that makes more sense.
Which, I mean, that kind of stood out to me, saying, have they made their decision? Are they going to say that they're not going? Or, you know, is he just saying in general that, you know, I don't know. But I did like that line. I thought it was funny. So then we get them sitting around eating dinner, and the doctor gets ready to take off again. And you know, he's ready to go, and you see Amy and Rory kind of sitting there just like, "Wait, what is he leaving? Is he really, what's going on?" And then he comes back, and you know, he's like, "Okay, I know that you guys have lives. I know that you don't want to give that up, and I understand that. I'm okay with it." You know, and I think he was getting ready to give his, you know, "I'll come back and visit. You know, it's been great having you guys along" kind of speech. Yeah, I think that was what I was feeling. Was like he was ready to give that speech there.
Yeah.
And then it took, you know, and Brian was like, "No, it's you that they can't give up," and you know, and I don't think they should, you know. Go save every planet that you can. You know, who else has that chance? You know, it showed that, you know, despite the fact that they'd been discussing this for a year and stressing out over it for a year, that, you know, Amy and Rory, given just the slightest little nudge, you know, they're out the door again. You know, they can't stop going with the doctor.
Yeah. You put that perfectly, yep.
Yeah, because all it took was just Brian saying, "Hey, go." "Okay, I'm gone," you know. So, and then we get the last spoken line of the series, or the episode. You know, Brian looks at the doctor and says, "Just bring him back safe." And at that moment, I groaned. I mean, just audibly, I was like, "Oh, really? You had to go there."
He promises he will.
I know.
He did earlier in the episode, but I think yes, they're lulling us into this false sense of.
No. Yeah. It was just like, man, I can't believe they just hit that again.
And then they are really building up this next episode.
Yeah. Well, and then I don't know if you knew this. I was reading about it, that the scene where they're waving at the TARDIS door and they get inside and everything. The way that the production schedule was done, this was actually the last episode or the last shot that they did with the three of them together.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so I mean, this was the last scene that they filmed with Arthur and Karen and Matt all together, and you know, I forget where I saw it, but yeah, they were saying that when they went in after they waved and shut the door, as soon as that door shut, all three of them hit the ground crying.
Oh,
yeah, it was just such an emotional moment, and they were, yeah, they had a big pseudo rap party at that point and everything, but it was just, you know, that. It was such an emotional moment for the three of them, and I went back and I kind of watched it again after I heard that. And you can kind of see it in their face. If you're looking closely, you can see all three of them are, you know, they're emotional. They're holding it back, and they're, you know, they're doing some phenomenal acting right there, because you can't tell that they're sad. But if you look closely and you know what to look for, you can tell that they're, you know, a drop of a hat, they're going to start.
I don't even want to watch it now after that. I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be rough on Saturday. It really is. So, well, did you have anything else to talk about with this episode?
No, not with this episode. That ends my notes. But I also wanted to hit on, if you wanted to maybe just speculate a little bit about the upcoming episode for Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this will be the last chance we have to do it with something other than Christmas episode for a little bit. So, you know, and then again, you know, this is such a long time coming for this episode. You know, it's such a pivotal point in the series, and, you know, we've been fed just morsels for so long that, you know, you can't help but speculate on it.
Yeah. I just found some teasers. I guess I won't say them because it might be spoilery, even though they're really not, so that's up to you. But, hold on.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say that for me, I'd prefer not, because I'm really trying to stay away from it, from anything from the next episode.
Okay.
Simply because, well, two reasons. One, I don't want spoilers. You know, I want to speculate, but I don't want to know. And two, if I ignore it, it's not going to happen. I can tell myself that for another few days.
All right, well, let me just, I'm going to be very, very vague about this, but they said that there's a scene in the episode that is very reminiscent of a scene in another episode. So I know what that episode is, but I'm not going to say it. But there's apparently now a ton of speculation out there about this because the episode in question contains, you know, every emotional thing that Amy and Rory go through. So people are like, it could be this scene, no, it could be this scene, it could be this other
scene. Yeah, I mean, the little bit at the end of the episode is, well, I guess it's safe to discuss, you know, everybody's seen it, but, you know, we see that, you know, the angels are a serious thing. You know, there was, I don't know if you, I think you've actually brought this up before, the theory that the Statue of Liberty is actually a weeping angel, and it just never moves because it's always being watched.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I've heard that, and I was like, oh, okay, that's ridiculous, whatever, you know. But then,
I think, it's going to be true.
When they showed the trailer, it's like, there was a good second that they were, you know, there was a shot of the Statue of Liberty, and it could be, okay, it's a British show, and so therefore the Statue of Liberty is semi-exotic, kind of like, you know, Big Ben or, you know, the Cliffs of Dover or something like that would be for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it could just be, hey, look, it's something out of the ordinary. You know, and that's why they showed it, but who knows?
Yeah, so, but I don't think that they really use establishing shots like that in a trailer that has to be so short. I think it has meaning, and I think it's true that it's going to be a weeping angel.
If it is, I'm going to be upset, because that's just ridiculous. I mean, we've got historical records of it being built. You know, it's not just like, hey, it got shipped over here from someone because, you know, they said they built it, but maybe they found it. We've got evidence of it being built.
Yeah.
I don't know
how they'll deal with that.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe it got replaced by a giant weeping angel and nobody noticed. No, so, all right, let's theorize on the exit of the ponds. How do you think it's going to go down?
Like you said, if I don't talk about it, it won't happen. but no, I think Rory's going to be the master. And no, although that would be awesome. I think I don't know. I mean, this episode we're going to see River Song, according to the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's going to be there for emotional impact. And I think it's probably going to involve the death of someone. I'm not sure who, but the way that they're playing it up is my only reason for thinking so.
Yeah. Well, all right. The problem I have with this is, you know, River being there, her timeline is, you know, she travels backwards. So in the future, she would know what happened at this point, you know. So if one of them died, you know, if they were in mortal danger or something, I think she would have let on. Yeah, I think that she wouldn't have been able to help herself. Even if, you know, she knew that she shouldn't, I think that she would have let something slip. You know, she would not willingly let them walk to their death without trying something first.
Well, I mean, without trying something first, yeah, but the same thing pretty much happened with the doctor. She was, like, she was going to have to let him die. I don't know. I'm not sure if her timeline also is, like, exactly backwards.
Yeah, I know it's not exactly backwards, but it's... Moffat would have to go through a lot of twisting and turning to make it fit. I mean, it's possible, but... I don't know. I mean, Moffat can't keep canon straight from, like, you know, three episodes ago, so it's, I don't know. Alright, so I think, even though I'm arguing the point, I think that you could be right. I think that it's possible one of them is going to die. And, alright, I'll just spell out my whole theory here. We've seen production episode or production shots from the Christmas episode, and you know the Doctor's in Victorian dress. All the other characters are in Victorian dress. You know, Jenna Louise Coleman is in Victorian dress. So we know the time frame of the episode basically.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm thinking is Rory's going to die. As much as I don't want that to happen, he's going to. I'm not sure. For some reason, it's stuck in my head. And because they keep saying that it's so emotional, I don't see the two of them staying together. They're going to split them up somehow. Because if Amy and Rory leave, but they're still together, it's going to be far less traumatizing. And... frankly, Moffat is a bastard. So he's not going to let us get through this without tearing us apart. So I think that's what's going to happen. They're going to be split up one way or another. And for my brain just keeps telling me that, you know, Rory's going to die.
I think, though, Rory's died so many times on the show already, I think it would just pack more punch if Amy was the one to go.
Yeah, I agree, but... All right, let me finish my theory here. So, Rory dies. Somehow, Amy gets, you know, touched by an angel. Zapped into the past. The Doctor can't stand that. He goes searching for her, but he doesn't, you know... There's no way to tell where, at least as far as we understand, there's no way to tell where the angel sends someone to when they get zapped. You know, when in Blink, it was just the only reason why Detector and Inspective Shipton wound up in 63 with the Doctor was because they got touched by the same angel. So, but I don't think there's any way to accurately track where someone's going. So,
I mean, that's also one of those things that they could just throw in there. That, like, oh, he knows where they're going.
Well, see, here's what I'm thinking, though, is that he might have a clue, or he might just go randomly hopping around history, and winds up in Victorian era, you know, England or something, and comes across Amy either on her deathbed or having just died. Because, you know, we've, in the production shots we've seen, there is a funeral or graveyard or something going on.
Okay.
So I'm thinking Rory's going to die, Amy's going to get sent back to the past, and the doctor's going to get there seconds too late. And so he's not going to be able to save Amy.
I think that, yeah. Okay.
So, anyway, that's my theory.
I need a little bit of time to I guess, digest that theory, but I definitely, I could see them going that way.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it's, I know that it's going to be brutal one way or the other. I don't know. I'm almost hoping that my theory is right, just so that I know what to expect. Because if it's not, I know it's going to be far worse. So I mean, I would love to. I think that if they got stripped away from the doctor, but were able to be together, I could deal with it. You know, it would be rough saying goodbye to them, but I could deal with it. But I don't think that's the happy ending that we're in store for.
You never know. Maybe they really are messing with us, and it's going to be nice and happy.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, but... Alright, well, do you have anything else to add?
No, I just, I can't believe that we're at the fall finale next week, or in 4 days, 3 days.
Yeah, it's creeping up on us real damn quick. Right, well, I guess that means that it's time to wrap up. This has been episode 7 of Gallifrey Public Radio, and get your Kleenex ready, and we will see you guys on the other side.
See you then.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Have something you want to say or just want to say hello? Send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or leave us a comment on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. You can also find our hosts at @_Melissa or at @Scopehound. Music by Dan Doodly Doo and Retcon Addict.